All right, hour number three, Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you here, Sean and Dalton, Dr. Bill, Kane, and you, of course, on the text line and the phone lines at 343-0106. Segment of the show brought to you by CSpire. What if you only needed one company to take on all your technology challenges? One company to handle security, cloud, internet, and more. Introducing the new CSpire Business, the industry's first full-stack managed solution provider. With over 500 service professionals, over 8,700 miles of fiber, and the ninth-ranked cloud system in the entire world. With everything in a single managed IT portfolio, the result is a faster, more secure way to do business. From desktop to data center, CSpire Business will meet you wherever you are and take on your biggest business technology challenges. Learn more at cspire.com/business. CSpire, customer inspired. All right, if you were on Twitter yesterday and anywhere in the realm of at Quinn Hillier or at Washington Examiner, you probably saw one of the stories getting a lot of talk yesterday. Quinn, of course, with his work over quinnhillier.com. And also, before we even get into the what's going on in the journalism side here, let's talk a little bit about the novelist side. Remind folks about the trilogy, Quinn, and how they can pick up all three books at exactly the same time.
At Amazon.com, they're the three Mad Jones books, or otherwise known as the Accidental Prophet Trilogy, and they are satire on modern media politics and religion, and they should be a lot of fun to read if you give them a chance.
Like, do you think spring break reading, beach book?
Oh, they're not beach books. There's not graphic sex and violence. But,
well, dang it!
Is that a requirement?
But it's
for
pretty
beach
good.
Books?
But it's pretty good stuff. It should make you chuckle and it should make you think. And I think that's what those are two good things in any book.
All right. We hadn't had a chance to talk since last week about this, but, you've, and no surprise, not like you're following a lead but your own, but arriving at the same place. I said last week it was time to say thank you. You know, and this is something that I didn't really get a lot of response on. I said, but for fans of President Trump, it was time to say thank you to then, or one-time Senator, then Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Don McGahn, and some others that did a good job of, number one, protecting the president, and number two, doing a good investigation on the Mueller side and the Rosenstein side. And I think there's a lot of positives here that seem to be getting swept under the rug.
Well, McGahn and Sessions are perhaps the two people that come out looking best in the entire Mueller report.
Yep.
Sessions, of course, is our local interest. And the Mueller report basically absolves him from accusations hurled by the left, by the right, and by President Trump. On all three fronts, Sessions comes out looking vindicated. The left, of course, at the beginning of the term kept saying that Sessions perjured himself on, you know, meetings with the Russian ambassador. And the Mueller report says that just didn't, you know, that's just not true, that in the context of the questions he was asked, every single thing that Sessions said was plausible. From the right, you know, and this includes a lot of Trump backers, they said he refused to properly investigate Hillary Clinton. That's also not true, and I've got a column where I explain that. He did order an investigation of Clinton at the right time and under circumstances that would protect it from political influence. Finally, of course, Trump kept ranting that Sessions should have recused himself. The Mueller report makes absolutely clear how unbelievably inane that is.
Well, the idea that
Sessions,
yes, that
had to recuse himself because he was a direct subject of the investigation. He became a direct subject, and you cannot oversee an investigation if you're the subject thereof.
Right. I mean, that one last part there, the takeaway, and of course for, you know, a hometown guy like me, that was very important because so many people say, well, he shouldn't have ever recused himself. He walked in there and did it in day one. Well, he walks in there and he's now Attorney General and he finds out he's part of this investigation. He has to recuse himself and more power to him that he just stayed mum and took all those arrows and didn't, you know, I don't think I'd been as strong. I'd have had a press conference said, I couldn't have done it, but I'd say, I want to tell y'all something, and one day I'm going to be able to tell y'all, and you're going to be sorry you said all this stuff.
Right. Well, look, here's the deal. They knew there was a Russian investigation going on it predated Mueller, and that Sessions, as part of the campaign, might be peripherally involved. And Sessions was asked about that during his confirmation hearings, and he said, "Well, you know, I'm gonna see where it goes, and I'm gonna defer to the ethics office, but it's not clear yet." But then, when the Democrats, during the confirmation hearings, accused him of perjury, which the Mueller report now shows was absolute bunk, but when they did, then he became an absolute subject of the report, because now he wasn't just part of the campaign, which might have made him a subject. Now he was a subject about whether he perjured himself about it. He had no idea, despite what Trump said. Sessions could not have known before he told Trump that he would serve. He could not have known that the Democrats were going to charge him with perjury, and that therefore he would definitely become a subject. That only happened as the confirmation hearings were going on. So he was in a no-win situation, but one that he really did not have a reason to anticipate, and he did everything that he could to do everything on the up and up, and more power to him.
Quinn, it looks like the Democrats still saying that maybe impeachment on the table for them. Have you heard anything from the Mueller report that they would use to try to impeach the president, and how do you think this plays politically for them?
Well, politically, if they keep going like that, they're monumentally stupid. The public is sick and tired of it. We now have everything, other than some minor redactions, everything in front of the public. The public can judge for itself. And yes, if you put everything, all the evidence of obstruction together so that you see a pattern of obstruction, each individual obstructive thing might not be indictable, but the whole pattern, if it weren't the president, probably would be indictable. But you know what? Impeachment is not meant for things that are sort of borderline, that are not clear. And so Trump comes out, he actually comes out not looking good, but he doesn't look nearly as bad as the Democrats said he would. And if the Democrats go on to try to impeach him for something that's in a gray area, that's not just politically stupid. It's also wrong in terms of how the system is supposed to work. We have political remedies for what amount to political crimes, and those remedies come at the ballot box.
Yeah, but the longer, I think it's a benefit to the president and Republicans, the longer they chase that rabbit, the less they're putting together some kind of cogent argument. And I said this about the Republicans in the past, too. Don't just say you oppose the person in the White House. Tell us how your plan is better, what you're going to do. And just, a lot of throw spaghetti against the wall socialist rhetoric, and then everything else being Trump's bad, that doesn't seem like planks of a platform.
Well, exactly. And look, y'all know I'm no fan of Trump, but you've got to give the devil his due. There was a thorough investigation, and they found no obviously impeachable crimes, and they found a guy who was more sort of vain and irascible than he was corrupt. And so move on. Let the public decide and move on, and let's start legislating. Just like you say, what is the Democrats' plan? They have not shown any plan for anything other than crazy stuff that they won't even vote for, like the Green New Deal.
Right.
I want to
talk about this, your piece over at the Washington Examiner, as commentary from the left, and they said this is the actions of President Trump were worse than Richard Nixon, and you say that's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. Look, I'm pretty disgusted by what the Mueller report says. I mean, I'm disgusted by Trump based on what the Mueller report says, but have some perspective, people. E.J. Dionne, the longtime columnist for the Washington Post, who at one point was thought of as sort of center-left, wisdom, he's gone completely off the deep end. He literally said that Trump's behavior, as shown in the Mueller report, makes Richard Nixon look like George Washington. Really? Okay. The very first thing is Richard Nixon literally misused the full weight and power from the top of the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, and the Secret Service to go after his political enemies. If anything, the shoe is on the other foot with Trump, because rogue elements of the FBI and the intelligence agencies, although not from the top, but rogue elements actually
worked against
Trump wrong.
Yeah.
So not only is Trump worse than Nixon, but even though Trump's defenders overstate the case about the deep state and all that, there was an element in the FBI that made Trump a victim rather than a victimizer.
Yeah.
And right there.
It's completely contrary.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I agree with what you said when I read the story yesterday. I mean, it's almost the things alleged here. I mean, they are 180 from Nixon. Not only are they not like Nixon, they're 180 from Nixon.
Nixon suborned perjury and arranged payments to people to be silent or to perjure themselves in legal proceedings. Trump, for everything else that he did, and he did try to impede the investigation and was saved from it by aides not following orders, etc., but he didn't directly suborn perjury in a legal proceeding, and the only payments that he arranged had nothing to do with the legal proceedings. They were to women, and they were, that's bad enough, but they were to women to keep his reputation, not to stop the wheels of justice. And again, right down the line, every single thing that Nixon did, Trump not only did not do worse than Nixon, but he either didn't do it at all or he did it to a much lesser extent.
There we go. Come back for the break. Quinn, can you hang on with us for a little bit? I want to talk some the exciting and page-turning, which it should be. I'm just being a smart aleck because years of talking about these stories and not seeing anything change is maybe that way. But yes, 2020, Social Security, you know, they got the lockbox, right, where they don't ever get into that money. So there's all that money that's there for... Oh, yeah, it's out of money in 2020, kind of, and disability about 30 years after that. We'll talk about this story more when we come back. Thank you, Kane. 824 FM Talk 106.5. I was remiss the last break to congratulate...
Yeah, Kenny. Congratulations, Kenny. Getting tickets to see Bryan Adams at the Wharf. Got you a pair of tickets. And Kenny is from Mobile, so he doesn't have very far to travel to come get those Bryan Adams tickets.
Good deal. So that show coming up on Friday the 10th. And the next night, Jim Gaffigan at the Wharf Amphitheater. And coming up on the midday show today, your chance at winning those tickets for Jim Gaffigan. Stay close for that. Quick reminder, too, Crawfish in the Courtyard, hosted by the Exporium Junior Advisory Board tonight. This is the 10th annual Crawfish in the Courtyard. Starts at 6, goes till 9, and we'll see if I go on back down to try to defend. I think I've been doing it for 4 years, the media crawfish eating contest, and I've won for 4 years.
If everyone's standing in there in the courtyard and you hear Sean's music come on, by God, that's Sean Sullivan's music.
That's
He's
right.
coming to the stage.
My
He's going to eat some crawfish.
He'll be dressed like Rowdy Piper or something like that. All right, to continue our conversation with Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com. Of course, check him out through the Washington Examiner and author of the Mad Jones Trilogy. And Social Security, Quinn, don't we have a lockbox? Isn't there a lockbox chock full of money for us?
There is no lockbox.
What? What?
There's
they
no
lied
lockbox.
To me. They lied to me.
They lied. And the Social Security and Medicare trustees issued their annual report yesterday. And lo and behold, next year in 2020, Social Security will start paying out on an annual basis more than it takes in. In 2026, Medicare, which already is paying out more than it takes in on an annual basis, Medicare's lockbox, its trust fund, will be depleted, meaning they have no reserves. In 2035, Social Security's trust fund will be depleted, meaning they have no reserves. That means that if you suddenly have no reserves, then the current money coming in compared to the current money going out will cause, if you've done nothing before, then automatic cuts to one of them of about 11-13%, to the other of about 20-25%. Cuts in benefits overnight unless you do something in the intervening years.
Now, once again, y'all, listen to this timeline. This is not, because quite often these stories will be like projected in 2097, you know, something. People are like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. That's a long way away. So the first shoe to drop next year for Social Security. Then what? Just 6 years later for Medicare. And then disability is 2050.
Next year means that there suddenly the lockbox starts to be depleted. In 2026, the Medicare lockbox or trust fund, which is only on paper anyway, it becomes entirely depleted. Entirely. Meaning there are no reserves. And in 2035, the same thing happens to Social Security, which means we're in a heap big trouble for people anywhere, you know, my age and below. I'm mid-50s. Anybody my age and below, we cannot expect the benefits that we have been led to expect unless we do something in the meantime. I've got a column that should be posted within the hour about the Hillier plan to fix it. 2 minutes isn't enough time to explain it, but basically it has some little tax increases, some tax cuts in other places. It's sort of revenue neutral, but it shifts the money, in effect, from being credited to the general fund to now being credited to Social Security and Medicare, where it should be, and that way extends the life of the program. And it does some other things, too. But there is a Hillier plan. Please be on the lookout for it at Washington Examiner.
No, I'm going to definitely do it and read it and want to talk with you about it going forward, because I get frustrated, just like when I discuss national debt, when I discuss issues like Social Security, there'll be many that basically, in so many words, pat me on the head and say, you know, you're just hayseed and naive. You don't need to worry about that stuff. Why don't I need to worry about that? Why am I silly worrying about the solvency of these programs?
I mean, look, every single American should, you know, unless you're 95 years old, should worry about the solvency of these programs, because it will hit you directly.
Yep.
And every listener out there should burn up the phone lines to your congressmen and your senators saying, you've had 25 years to fix this and have done nothing. Now get off your butt and actually legislate.
Well said. Well said. We'll look forward to that at Washington Examiner. People want to reach out to you on Twitter. What's your handle over there?
It's at Quinn Hillier. One N on Quinn and two L's in Hillier.
All right.
And then Washington Examiner Quinn Hillier, or just quinnhillier.com.
All right. And the trilogy, available now?
Mad Jones Heretic, Mad Jones Agonistes, available at Amazon.com.
All right. Very good, Quinn. We'll talk soon. I'll look forward to that column. Quinn Hillier joining us here. What about that? I mean, this has happened before, and they've continued to kick the can down the road. And this is, I get the same reaction on my fears about Social Security that I get on the debt. You know, the people will say, well, Sean, you just don't understand. It's okay for us to have this much debt, because where else are countries going to invest their money? They're never going to call those debts because they can't get the money from somewhere else. So Social Security is fine. We'll increase the economy and it'll work out. You got the baby boom generation. You have my generation, Generation X, that is smaller than baby boom. Now, thank goodness your generation is bigger, Dalton.
Yep.
But the Generation X right here in the middle, I get the squeeze. I think it is a fair thing to ask members of Congress what they're doing as they're working on some very hard-hitting pieces of legislation. Why not, you know, just tackle like Social Security, making sure it's solvent. How about that? How about y'all do that? Coming right back, more of Mobile Mornings.
FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Right now we head over to McConnell Automotive, where we talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Good morning, Dalton. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I am doing great, and even better that I know the pink tag sale still ongoing at McConnell Automotive. Tell everyone what the pink tag sale is and how they can save big on a vehicle.
Yeah, Dalton, first of all, I want to thank everybody for taking advantage of it because we've had just a huge success. But really what it is simply, Dalton, is there's a tag on every vehicle. So customers that are listening that do not like to negotiate, this is for you. Not only do you not have to, you don't get to. It's literally like GM supplier price minus big rebates. And quick example, you'll drive on the lot and you'll see over 16% off most every Buick. You'll see up to 20% off a lot of the GMCs. And Dalton, my favorite example we keep talking about is these last 11 or 12 2018 trucks I've got are over 20% off. That's 13 grand off the sticker price, man. It is awesome. And you know, we talk about it all the time. People can just literally go to my website, McConnellAutomotive.com, and find out what SUV or truck that they want, pick it out, and save probably $4,000 or $5,000 more than they will next month. It's really that great of a sale, man.
That is some great news. What a deal. We appreciate it, Mitch.
Y'all have a wonderful day, Dalton.
All right, you too. That's Mitch McConnell. Make sure you go see him and the crew at McConnell Automotive. You'll find them on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
All right, some political talk to get into in just a second, but I do want to, before we do get into that, something you tweeted out was over the weekend about, we've been following this Holes Hour on Jeopardy, right? This Jeopardy James Holes Hour.
Yep.
Who has been on a pretty incredible winning streak here. And I do, you know, when I get to watch TV, which not often, I do probably build out a habit and growing up in my house to watch Jeopardy. And this is a pretty amazing thing for a guy to go on week after week and month after month in winning in Jeopardy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating story. Of course, I think Ken Jennings, and this was back in 2004. I didn't realize how long it had been since Ken Jennings became a Jeopardy household name, but
yes,
he, I think, won 72 times in a row, $2.5 million, and he holds the record for
$2.5 million, y'all, in Jeopardy.
He holds the record for both of those. Now, with his win yesterday, Jeopardy James Holzhauer, he's only won 13 in a row, which is a far, far cry from Ken Jennings' 72 wins, but he's already at $950,000 won because he just keeps setting the single day record over and over again. And I find this guy fascinating because I love studying sports gambling.
This guy is, right?
He is a professional gambler in Las Vegas. And I read a profile on him from ESPN.com over the weekend. And I learned a lot about him, but also a lot about the game of Jeopardy and the people that compete in Jeopardy. He was a really smart guy, grew up, I think he was in the chess club, math club, all those, of course, right, in school, and went to college, and then moved out to Vegas. And there was a group of guys from Vegas, all poker players, that would play trivia every a couple nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
And he was their favorite because he was the one who didn't drink as much as the other guys.
Right. So
he was
smart,
the most dependable. And they said their team in trivia night was so good that they would win 85 to 94% of the time playing trivia. And he took that. He's been on other trivia shows, but Jeopardy is the one he's wanted to be on for
sure,
so long.
Sure, that's the big daddy. Yeah.
Said he built his own statistical models, and that's what he uses for his sports gambling. But the way they practice for Jeopardy, I guess everyone that's on Jeopardy pretty much knows all the answers. They said if you're on Jeopardy, you know 85 to 90% of the answers. It's about being the first one to buzz in.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed the rules so you couldn't buzz in while Alex Trebek was asking the questions.
Right.
Because that made it tough for the viewers to play along.
Yes.
If they know the answer three words in, it's not as fun at home.
Right. And it's built for, that. This is something we talk about in communications a bunch, even in talk radio, it's built for the viewer or listener, not for the contestant or the person doing it at that time.
Right. So the trick, and that's what this James guy has figured out, is when to buzz in. And there's a light that blinks whenever Trebek is done with his question. Ken Jennings used Alex Trebek's rhythm of his voice and figured out when the question would be over to do his buzzing. But this James Holzhauer, he just sees exactly when the lights blink that it's time to buzz in. He gets in before everyone else, and he hardly ever misses. I think he's missed like maybe 6 or 7 times in his 13 game run, but it's just been awesome to watch. It's dominant. He dominates whoever he goes up against.
Yeah, that's one of the risks, though, right? I mean, if you're gonna work off the rhythm of Trebek's voice, you're almost buzzing in before your brain has computed the answer. Sometimes you're going ahead and getting in line first, and then you got to make sure you pull that information out.
Yeah, and then it locks you out for a quarter of a second if you buzz in too early, and that quarter of a second makes all the difference because the other two contestants will buzz in before you. But I guess part of his other strategy is he dances is around the board, he'll go towards the $1,000 and the 2,500s first, try to find those daily doubles, and then he bets big on the daily double instead of...
He probably has run the statistical chance of getting the higher, the higher money answer and getting daily double. Wow.
Yeah, he said, rather than try to win a little bit and win it all in Final Jeopardy, go ahead and win it during the regular rounds.
Right.
So you got plenty of money to play with in Final Jeopardy. And then he bets big then, even though he knows he can't lose. So that's pretty cool. And I guess you could watch him again today because his run continues.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you're talking about the numbers thing, and I kept trying to encourage this. My son is just amazing with numbers. I was not. Numbers were not my thing. My son is, and it makes me so happy. And because I know people like this that are numbers people in the sports world where mm-hmm. they crunch numbers. Obviously, you could be a professional gambler. Those people don't really get involved in cheering. They don't care about this team or that player. They're looking at statistical trends mm-hmm. out there. Even some of the best people in the trading world. I mean, I've told you I've got a brother-in-law who is, I've asked him he trades on his own, has his own, that's what he does.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it for a long time. The guy's a qualified genius. And I'll ask him, what do you think about such and such stock? Because I mess around in equities. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. I said, what do you mean? What do you think about this company? You like that company because they're unveiling the new so-and-so? He said, I don't know. He said, the stock has acted this way, Sean. And when it acts this way, then it goes off and down, and then it comes back up, and it follows this pattern. I'm like, I was worried about them unveiling a new product, and you're looking at statistical models. So encourage those children that show aptitude here for numbers and statistics. It's whether you're playing Jeopardy and you're just finding a great job to make a lot of money in the economy of the future, mm-hmm. I think those people will be well compensated.
Yeah, it's the suckers like us that get emotionally involved
right.
in the games or in the stocks.
Yeah, exactly. Those people like me that are excited about the new product that the company has, or the people that are excited about a ball team because they signed so-and-so, we're all the suckers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we are the suckers, the people that just look at the numbers in a cold, hard space. Those are the winners.
I think you could take this Jeopardy James, though. We got to put you up against him in a crawfish eating.
Oh, okay. Probably take him out. Get him here for crawfish eating.
We can do that.
That's where I shine. Statistically, that's where I shine. We also, yesterday, it was town hall day.
Mm-hmm. Five town halls.
And Democrat hopefuls for 2020. We're out telling everybody what they would do. It has a lot of people talking this morning. Let's run to, who are we going to go to first?
It was back-to-back town halls on CNN. Mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, and Pete Buttigieg, the mayor, they call mm-hmm. him, I guess, Mayor Pete. And there were some pretty provocative, I guess, things said during these town halls. I mean, you got socialists.
Yeah,
you
let's
got
out-socialist each other.
Centrists, and they, of course, went hard on gun control. But also, I think the thing that was most inflammatory that was said yesterday, not only by Bernie Sanders, but Kamala Harris followed him, and that is to give felons, not only felons out of prison, but felons currently serving time in prison, the full voting rights, no matter the charge, whatever they've done. Even the Boston bomber, who Bernie Sanders was specifically asked about, the Tsarnaev brother that lived, the one that's still in prison.
He thinks he should be voting.
Thinks that he should be allowed to vote. And Bernie Sanders led off with that, but Kamala Harris came on after him. And Don Lemon, who was the host here, that was the first thing he asked Kamala Harris about. He didn't, and it was almost like he said, you're not going to agree with this, right? But here's Don Lemon asking Kamala Harris about giving felons the right to vote.
Another issue that I want to talk to you about, this is really important. I'm not sure if you were watching earlier, but Senator Bernie Sanders said that that he is in favor of felons being able to vote while serving in prison. He was asked specifically about people like the Boston Marathon bomber, also people who are convicted of sexual assault. And he said, this is a quote, "The right to vote is inherent to our democracy, yes, even for terrible people." Do you agree with that, Senator?
I agree that the right to vote is one of the very important components of citizenship. And it is something that people should not be stripped of needlessly, which is why I have been long an advocate of making sure that the formerly incarcerated are not denied a right to vote, which is the case in so many states in our country. In some states, permanently deprived of the right to vote. And these are policies that go back to Jim Crow. These are policies that go back to the heart of policies that have been about disenfranchisement, policies that continue until today. And we need to take it seriously.
But people who are in convicted in prison, like the Boston Marathon bomber, death row, people who are convicted of sexual assault, they should be able to vote?
I think we should have that conversation.
So that's her saying, yeah, those on death row, we should have that conversation. Unbelievable.
So this is what I say, that somebody can be pretty left in the Democrat Party and seem centrist. Example, how far left it goes.
And by the way, she pledged executive order on gun control in the first 100 days.
Yes, remember what I said about executive orders and the danger of that? We'll get some more of that audio when we return and talk to you at 343-0106. Shot this one! 852 FM Talk 106.5. What was it? 2 years ago when I told y'all this Roundup case out of California would be a big thing?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
You called it.
Everybody said, nah, you, that's just some kind of freak case out there. Okay. All right. Phone number 343-0106. 343-0106. I'd love to hear from you. Also on the text line, people texting in to the same number here. This is our buddy Ben says, I can't believe what I just heard. This blank is off the rails. In other words, the idea here that that felons, this is not, there's two parts of this discussion. I think there's a fair discussion. People who have served their time, okay, served their, if they've made their amends to society and they're out, can they? I mean, look at Alabama. You can petition for, you know, having the return of your voting rights. I think a smart discussion's happened for Republicans, and, you know, it's funny. People are like, I can't believe they're saying that. Well, look at the strategy. The strategy is if felons are being given the right to vote,
mm-hmm.
and it's all Democrats doing this, then where will many of those votes go?
The
Democrats, right?
Yeah.
So it would be purely pragmatic decision for Republicans to push for the right for felons to get their for felons who have served their time to get their voting rights back. I think that's a fair discussion. I mean, you could have nuanced discussion within it, but I think that is a fair discussion. It's, you know, you could, I would argue, if we believe that they served their time, so therefore they can now, I want them to be back in society. I want, it's why so many pushes for things to decrease recidivism, right? That they get out of prison, they get jobs, they get opportunities to get back in the workforce and be part of society. I think that's good, and part of being in society would be voting rights after you serve your time. But that's not what's being discussed here. This is people that are incarcerated for a spectrum of crimes, some of the worst.
Sexual assault, murder.
Yeah. Those people would be voting.
From prison.
Is it short-sighted that, you know, the argument there, well, they're still citizens, so they should not be denied the right to vote, and then they went with the Jim Crow thing. Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
This is something that is beyond any kind of discussion of a Jim Crow law and obstruction of voting. These people are currently in prison. We have taken their right away to liberty, right? To being able to move freely about society. So if you challenge that right of voting being taken away, then is the next thing you challenge the fact that they should be convicted, but they shouldn't actually go to prison? I mean, what are we talking about here?
And it wasn't all. There were five Democrats that did their town halls last night, and we heard Kamala Harris agree with Bernie Sanders that we should have the conversation that currently incarcerated felons should be allowed to vote. Pete Buttigieg, though, he disagreed. He said part of the punishment when you're convicted of a crime and incarcerated is you lose certain rights. He did agree that once released from prison, you should be re-enfranchised if you follow certain if you follow certain protocol after you get out. But he it wasn't all five of them that said, yeah, I think all prisoners should be allowed to vote. But Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris certainly did. And Bernie Sanders said, yeah, I've written plenty of 30-second opposition ads against myself in my life. This will just be another one. And he was right, because the Republican National Committee sent out an email pretty much immediately saying that his remarks were beyond extreme.
We'll see. The interesting place here, like I've said, with the Biden effect. Biden can come in. Now, remember, Vice President to President Obama. Joe Biden could come in and seem like absolutely a centrist candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, you look at it for Democrats, can that seemingly centrist Democrat candidate that would be troubling for President Trump in 2020, can that person make it through the primaries? Will the primaries be so far shifted left? Look at the candidates we're talking about so far. If they are so far left, that person may not make it. And that's why you would imagine the gift to President Trump is what's going on with the Democrats. If the candidate that comes through the primaries is one, because in primaries, Democrat primaries will always be further left than the general, and Republican primaries will always be further right than the general. It's just the nature of the beast. So if they end up with somebody, if the new benchmark, the middle ground of Democrat politics has been moved so far left, then the people that will go left of that to win in the primaries will have a canyon, a grand canyon, mm-hmm. between where they, what rhetoric got them elected in the primaries and what they would be needing to say to get elected in a general.
Yeah, and that's why the Democrats that actually want to win this next election, why they would prefer to have Biden or Beto or Rourke, mm-hmm. or even this Buttigieg, you know, kind of from middle America. You got Beto from Texas, Buttigieg from Indiana. They don't have as far left policies as some of these other ones, other liberals that are up there running. But that's exactly why I think a Kamala Harris has a really good shot at winning this nomination. She is so really? Far left, and I've been saying it since she entered. Kamala Harris is who I think will win the Democrat nomination, unless she just completely goes off the rails, but that might even help her, because just looking online at what the Democrats who will be voting in the primary want out of their candidates, they want them to go this far left. They want them to talk about gun control executive orders and giving felons the right to vote and just allowing all immigrants to come in legally, no matter how they get into America.
But just open borders. Yeah,
open borders.
If once again, that center line of what the center line of Democrat politics has shifted so far left. You can look at this, interestingly enough, for the Republicans, and that kind of middle ground was shaken by Donald Trump, because some things Donald Trump, he was, as a populist, he was kind of centrist by the fact that he had things that were very far right of where the center of the Republican Party was, but then he had things left of the center, and they somehow, the two of them canceled one out that made him more centrist, but it was scattered, right? It was right, left of center instead of just being centrist. With the Democrats, it's left of that. It'll be interesting what happens. We'll talk about this more coming up on the Midday Show, and Mike Gallagher on the way next. Y'all have a good one.